Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Good to be back with you on the show today. I missed you guys yesterday. I'll talk a little bit about that coming up in a moment. We're going to discuss Ron DeSantis's interesting Twitter space launch of his presidential campaign, what was good about it, what went wrong with it. Pramila Jayapal, Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal, who's the head of the Progressive Caucus, does not like how the media is covering the debt limit debacle. We'll play a clip from her. I was at an event over the weekend, or not even, oh my gosh, it was literally yesterday. It was, wow, that shows you part of the reason why I canceled the show yesterday. I was at an event a couple days ago, and there was a very unexpected, essentially, announcement about a gubernatorial run that we'll discuss. Later on, I'm going to read an article that is the epitome, the best example I think I've ever seen of why this nation is so divided. It has to do with Ron DeSantis and his bid for the presidency. My sister Miranda will also join us on Florida Report. I wanted to get her reaction to the NAACP issuing a travel advisory for Black Americans to her state of Florida. I'm very curious if she thinks that Black Americans ought to be cautious about traveling there. If you have not become a subscriber to the show already, please do so. Help us support the show. Help make sure we can do this full time. Nicole can do this full time. Go to undividedpod.com, and you can help support the show for as little as $5 a month and also get access to bonus content like our awesome show Sundays with subscribers. Okay, Nicole, how are you doing today? Yesterday was an adventure. I apologize.
Oh, today has been an adventure as well, yeah. But we're doing...
Every day is an adventure.
We're doing great.
Yeah, I am.
So I have no complaints.
I had no plans to cancel the show yesterday because I told you guys I was going to Walla Walla to give a speech to the Washington Trucking Association, which mm-hmm. is why our Monday show was a little short. And I'll tell you, I hit a wall.
Tuesday
show. See, I literally have a problem. It's why our Tuesday show was a little short. I hit a wall, man. I thought that I was going to be able to do that. Wake up at 5 a.m., drive back, you know, 4.5 hours, mm-hmm. throw a show together and get on the air. And I called Nicole, or I think you called me to check in. And I was like, I can't do the show today.
Yeah.
I hit a wall. I was feeling terrible. I was physically exhausted. And then we had this KTTH event, the Freedom Series that I was supposed to be at last mm-hmm. night in Renton. And I was like, I have to sleep. I just have to sleep because I can't cancel on them at the last minute. And so I slept for a few hours, felt better.
You sounded better, too, because when I talked to you in the morning, I was a little nervous for your day.
Yeah, I will say, though, I was backstage. And thank you to subscribers who came and Undivided folks who came down to the theater in Renton. KTTH and our friend Jason Rantz put on this awesome conversation mm-hmm. about public safety. They had a ton of great speakers. I mean, yes. The Seattle Police Chief, the head of Seattle Police Officers Guild, several mayors, bipartisan. Everett Mayor Cassie Franklin was there, a Democrat. And I had to literally put a smile on before I walked out from backstage because I just really was feeling super, super depleted. So thank you for understanding.
Would not have known it from the seats.
Okay, good. So I really had to just put it on, and then I had to leave to go to sleep after that. So I'm sorry if I didn't get a chance to stick around and talk to all of you, but I appreciate you coming. It was a fun event. So speaking of the Walla Walla event I was at, this was interesting. I just wanted to mention this off the top of the show today. So do you remember when we had Senator Mark Mullett in and we were talking about all sorts of things, public safety, the legislative session, and then at the very end, I just threw a question at him about whether he'd run for governor. Here's the clip. But would you run for governor?
Would I run for governor?
Have you thought about it?
I have been asked mm-hmm. by several people to consider that option. Session literally finished like 3 days ago.
Would you? Is it something you would rule out?
No, I definitely would not rule it out. Yeah. I just think a lot of people have talked to me about it, and I just, my mindset is I had to get through session. That's mm-hmm. happened. At this point, I just want to get to the summer and see what things look like, you know, in the summer. But it's something I'm definitely not off the table.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Well, yeah, we talked about Bob Ferguson and Jay Inslee yesterday and had a big debate about their level of likability. You'll have to watch the segment.
Oh,
if you ever
like
run,
it.
We'll also have a lengthy debate about your level of likability. Yeah, so... Anyway, I was speaking at this event and I spoke about basically how one party rule is destroying our state. And then Senator Mark Mullett spoke. And he basically announced that he is going to run for governor. He's going to make that announcement in the next week or so. And no one in the room was expecting him to say that when he was up on stage. And so everybody was sort of looking at each other like, oh, he just basically made the announcement there. I mean, he was like, I am going to run. And it was almost like a stump speech of sorts. And so true to my word, Senator Mullet, we will be having a discussion about your level of likability as soon as you come back. But I think it's an interesting, and I'm curious to hear your guys' thoughts on this, because so he's a Democrat. But he's a pretty moderate Democrat. I would argue the most moderate Democrat left in Olympia. And he was saying during his remarks to the Washington Trucking Association that he sees a path for himself. He doesn't want Bob Ferguson to win. He thinks if there's enough Republican candidates, then he can squeeze through. It would be a top two Democratic primary. And if he makes it through with Bob Ferguson, then he would win. I know there's some Republicans who are like, well, we don't want that. We don't want a top two Democratic primary. But, you know, when you have an open seat like we do in the governor's race in Washington, it brings out a ton of candidates. And so the primary can get a little bit interesting, especially as a top two primary where it's not guaranteed that a Democrat and Republican are the ones to go through. Now, I have some complaints about our friend, Senator Mark Mullet. I don't like that he voted to ban semi-automatic rifles because I think it's unconstitutional. And so I just don't like when you support bills that are unconstitutional. He also voted in favor of 5599, which has to do with kids seeking shelter for protected health care. So I've already talked to him about those two issues on the air, but now under the umbrella and like the idea that he's running to be governor, we can have another conversation about them. So I look forward to having Senator Mark Mullet in when he makes that announcement official. All right, speaking of announcements, the Ron DeSantis 2024 announcement was fascinating, but also a little bit of a train wreck. So he decides that he's going to make his announcement on Twitter Spaces with Elon Musk. And that's basically like a live room where people can join and be part of a Twitter space. But it's not on video or anything. I will say, just generally speaking, I thought it was an interesting idea. Because here you have a guy who everyone knows and has known for a while he's going to run for president. So like, how can you make an announcement interesting when everybody's already expecting it and it's a foregone conclusion? So, you know, doing it on Twitter, which is already, you know, this really talked about platform right now, doing it with Elon Musk and doing it in a different way, I thought was a creative idea. Now, it didn't go particularly well. And I'm going to, after I play this, I'll bring you in, Nicole, because this made me feel so much better about the tech issues that we have. So there's like hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people in this Twitter space, this virtual room, and there's more tens of thousands joining by the second. And it could not apparently handle the bandwidth. And so I'm just going to play a couple. First of all, off the top, there was like 8.5 minutes of silence. So I'm just going to play a little bit of what aspects of this sounded like to folks who were waiting for this huge announcement from Ron DeSantis.
All right. Good afternoon, good evening, or good morning, everyone, depending on wherever in the world you're joining us from. I'm broadcasting live from Twitter headquarters. It's David Sachs here. Elon is sitting next to me.
And we want
to welcome you to this historic Twitter Spaces event, and more broadly, a first in the history of social media. Tonight, I'm pleased to introduce two individuals who've done more to loosen the grip. All right, sorry about that. We've got so many people here that I think we are kind of melting the servers.
All right, great. Looks like we're ready to go here.
It's almost giving me anxiety because I'm like, right, is that glitches on our end?
Welcome, Governor DeSantis, for this historic.
We're just trying to get it going because there's so many people.
That's unfortunate. We've never seen this before. Welcome, so.
Governor DeSantis, for this historic. We're just trying to get it going
because
there's so many people.
Yeah, and that was a little mock-up put together by someone else that we grabbed. But it was a little bit of a disaster. And I was telling Nicole, I said, I feel so much better about the tech issues that we have because not even Elon Musk at Twitter could make it go seamlessly.
It's just the way it happens. I think that when using technology that's this new, yeah, that we're all using, things have to go wrong for you to figure out how to fix it and how to prevent it from going wrong the next time. And so it definitely happens to everybody, even Elon.
Even Elon Musk, a man who's going to get us to Mars, in a build a colony on Mars.
Right.
Even his Twitter Spaces is a disaster.
Right. I do wish that they had video. I thought that was a missed opportunity.
Because Ron DeSantis he has a lot of presence on stage in front of a lectern and in a crowd. Yep. So I do think that would have been nice. But again, I kind of go back to, how do you make an announcement exciting that everyone has been expecting for such a long time?
Right.
And I think they also, it was strategic in sort of cutting the media out in a traditional way. In fact, one of his campaign people was telling media outlets, well, you can just join the Twitter Spaces like everyone else's. And sort of saying, you have to consume this announcement like everyone else does. I will, though, play for everyone. I think we should actually play the Twitter he put a video on Twitter, a more traditional campaign announcement. I'll play it for you. It was pretty short.
Our border is a disaster. Crime infests our cities. The federal government makes it harder for families to make ends meet. And the president flounders. But decline is a choice. Success is attainable. And freedom is worth fighting for. Righting the ship requires restoring sanity to our society, normalcy to our communities, and integrity to our institutions. Truth must be our foundation, and common sense can no longer be an uncommon virtue. In Florida, we proved that it can be done. We chose facts over fear, education over indoctrination, law and order over rioting and disorder. We held the line when freedom hung in the balance. We showed that we can and must revitalize America. We need the courage to lead and the strength to win. I'm Ron DeSantis, and I'm running for president to lead our great American comeback.
So I liked the simplicity of that. I'll just note, we had just like a little fire alarm of some kind go off, of course, after we made fun of Elon Musk. So it sounds like it stopped, but if that continues, we might dive into Florida Report, which is pre-taped today, and figure out if it's actually an emergency. There it is. Let's do this. Let's dive into Florida Report while we figure out if we're actually in an emergency situation. Here's my sister Miranda.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello.
Hi.
I just have to start with this because we talked about it on the podcast, the NAACP issuing a travel advisory for Black people to Florida. Are they not safe in your state?
As far as I know, they're safe. I mean, I can't speak for everybody, but I thought that travel advisory was way off base from what the reality that we actually have here in Florida is. I mean, DeSantis had a pretty good response to this. I mean, it kind of covers why Florida is not an unsafe place for African Americans. He obviously, of course, called it a political stunt. He said, claiming that Florida is unsafe is a total farce. I mean, are you kidding me? You look at cities around the country, they are awash with crime. In Florida, our crime rate is at a 50-year low. You look at the top 25 cities for crime in America, Florida does not have a single one amongst the top 25. He goes on to say, you know, if you look at cities like Baltimore and Chicago, you got kids more likely to get shot than to receive a first-class education. Yet I don't see the NAACP batting an eye about all the carnage that's happening in those areas. So this is a political stunt. These left-wing groups have been doing it for many years, and they are colluding with legacy media to try to manufacture a narrative. And I can't help but to agree with that in pretty much every aspect, you know, because Florida is not only a very popular state. He also goes on to talk about how Florida has more Black-owned businesses than most states in the United States. And he also has a lot of African-American elected officials that have been part of the Florida government since he's been governor. So he goes on to name some pretty good points as to why this is a completely manufactured statement by the NAACP.
Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous. The other thing we've been talking a lot about is DeSantis taking the culture wars too far. On this one, I absolutely think the answer is yes. Amanda Gorman, who read a poem, she was like the poet laureate at Biden's inauguration, apparently they turned that into a book and Has it been banned?
No, it has not been banned. So that's something that I did some looking into, because as I'm pulling stories for today, that was one that I found a lot on. And a lot of the headlines are talking about it being banned. It was not banned. It has been moved from the elementary school section of the media center in this particular school to the middle school section, because they believe that the content is not for elementary age students. It's more for middle school and high school age students. So you can still get the book in the library. It is still there. They're just putting kind of an age group on it more than anything.
What's the rationale, though, for it not being suitable for elementary school kids? Because I thought it was a beautiful performance.
Yeah, I mean, I think the complaint kind of talks about how they think that it's got like the message has ulterior motives and could be capable of indoctrinating children. I personally think that the better argument would just to be that the content of the poem is maybe better suited for old, like children of an older age, just like movies and games all have like an age rating. You still play games outside the age rating and you still watch movies when you're not supposed to be at them. But you know, that comes to parental consent, and it also just comes down to like your choice. So it is kind of just another one of those things. This had nothing to do with DeSantis, by the way. This was a parent that brought this to the school's attention. It got submitted to the long list of books that are being reviewed in Florida, and it was not removed, but it was decided that this is the content of this book is better suited for kids of middle school level and older.
Yeah. I mean, everything that happens in Florida will be DeSantis's fault from now until the end of the presidential election. One more thing, just because this is my nightmare of seeing like a snake in the toilet. It happened in Florida, but it wasn't a snake. And I almost think this might be worse.
Yeah, I think that you're right. This is probably worse. A man in Florida went into his bathroom after he heard some splashing in the toilet and found a huge iguana just looking up to at him, teeth bared in the toilet. Iguanas, upon a little bit of research, I found out iguanas can hold their breath up to 30 minutes, and they are notorious for getting into sewers and swimming up your sewage pipes right up into your toilet. So this happens a lot. And I think that the NAACP would be better to issue travel advisories about this than some of the other ones they put out there. But he was able to work up the courage to grab it and get it out of his house. And he's hoping that it'll never happen to him again.
See, I tend to think that the iguana wouldn't be able to fit up a toilet in like that. I think it probably came in from the outside.
I don't know. I've heard of this happening so many times, not just with iguanas, but frogs also down here. And also I've seen the stories of snakes too. I mean, I have seen iguanas swim. And if you've ever seen that movie Godzilla, they swim just like that. They tuck their legs back and they turn into a little snake. And I think they could probably work their way up into some pipes. So
Florida,
if you come to Florida,
stories, Florida iguana,
check the toilet first.
Oh, man. All right, Miranda, thank you.
You're welcome.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Meow. Okay, so we found out they're doing some fire alarm testing. I don't know how long this testing is going to last. So because Elon Musk could do it and push through on his Twitter spaces.
Of course we were just talking about that.
We were.
Just
we jinxed,
talking
we jinxed
about
it.
That. We jinxed
it. We can't do anything about it. So we're just going to push through and act like it's not happening. And that's just what it's going to be like today. Somebody said it's because our podcast is so fire.
Oh, there we go.
So true. Okay, are you in the market to sell your home? Why not do it with our friend Wes Jones, a great real estate agent. He's been doing this in our area for a long time. Him and his team at West Jones and Associates have an innovative marketing strategy. I talked to him about what he can do for you that a traditional real estate agent might not be able to.
We have programs in place to help you prep your home. We can help cover your repairs and even cosmetic upgrades, where you can pay for those at the, you know, at the closing table. We have a flexible commission structure. We have the absolute best marketing that you're going to find of any real estate agent. And there is a lot of programs and different things that we do that I go pretty in depth with on my website. So you can start by going to sellwithwest.com and go to the sell a house feature, and you can got to go under some of the different programs, you know, that we have to learn a little bit more. If you want to check out your home's value, just plug in your, you know, your address there. And if you want to book up a consultation with me, just give me a, you know, just give me a call. My cell phone is there on the website, and you know, it's super low pressure. You know, I'm going to tell you the truth if this makes sense, you know, or it doesn't for you, and I'm going to treat you fairly.
Yeah, so check out sellwithwest.com. That's sellwithwest.com. You can contact him and you can just ask his advice, like, hey, we know we want to sell our home. Is now a good time to do it? What can you do to get me the top possible dollar for my home with the fewest possible contingencies? Sellwithwest.com, a better way to sell your home. Okay, the headline of today's episode is no, no, nope, 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 nope. And it's because of the clip I'm about to play with Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal. So we haven't talked a whole lot about the debt ceiling debate. Maybe we should have been discussing it a little bit more. But, you know, it's kind of this push and pull between Republicans saying we need to stop spending so much money, which I agree with, although I think Republicans in some ways have also contributed to debt and not always held true to their limited government, limited spending, you know, mantra. But anyway, so Congresswoman Jayapal was asked a question by a member of the media about, hey, you know, if are you willing to tank this? Are progressives, is the progressive caucus willing to tank this if they don't like the deal that comes together? And here's what she said.
But you're willing to tank it if it's not?
They are willing to tank it. They, no, 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 sorry. That is exactly the problem, is when the media reports this as not their fault. And I'm just going to say, I know so many of you, I have so much respect for what you do, but let's tell the truth here. We are not tanking anything. The debt ceiling has been raised because we have an appropriations process, and during the appropriations process, the budget process, we negotiate. The Republicans can try to get whatever they can there, but then we agree. No, this is important. The American people should hear this. Then we agree on spending. Republicans agree, Democrats agree, we decide, we appropriate money based on what Congress has passed, legislation that we pass in this body. That is democracy. And then, when it's time, the debt ceiling is raised to accommodate what we have already passed, Republicans and Democrats, in a democratic process.
I'm sorry, let me just clarify. I read if the president, the White House, and Republicans come to an agreement tomorrow, let's say, and there are one or two items on there that you are not happy with, are you willing to vote against that?
Well, we don't draw red lines about what a final bill is.
Yeah, so first of all, no, no, nope, 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 nope. I love how, like, the one time the media pushes back against progressives or suggests that something bad that happens might be their fault, it's like, absolutely, you're not allowed to say that. Like, when the media is not working with them, it is like a full-blown meltdown. You know, it is true that if Republicans hold firm and they absolutely will not sort of walk away from their position on this, that you could say that they're the ones, you know, tanking this whole situation. But what the reporter was trying to ask, and again, she reiterated her question, is if you have an agreement between Biden and Republicans to avoid this disaster, and there's a couple things in it that the progressive caucus does not like, will you vote against it, thus tanking it? So it's really the issue that Congresswoman Jayapal probably had was one of semantics in the word tanking. But I had to laugh at the rant she went on against the media for daring to suggest that this would not just solely be the fault of Republicans. So no, 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 no. All right, let's move on to our segment, Unbelievable. I used to really love some of the in-depth reporting from Vanity Fair. And look, I know it's not, you know, Pulitzer Prize winning journalism. I'm not ever expecting that. But they used to do some really interesting in-depth feature work. But it has become just so blatantly biased. And I just worry for people who this is where they actually, like, get information, or they think very highly of Vanity Fair and they're reading this and they take it seriously. And it, more than anything I think I've ever read, this speaks to why America is so divided and why we're so quick to vilify people who don't share our political beliefs. So before Ron DeSantis' official formal announcement, Vanity Fair wrote this article. Here's the headline. Report: Ron DeSantis will formally announce his 2024 bid with Elon Musk because apparently David Duke wasn't available. So the first paragraph, after many months of refusing to confirm what so many people already suspected, Ron DeSantis will reportedly announce on Wednesday that he's running for president. And that's not all. He is said to be planning to formally jump into the 2024 race during a conversation on Twitter with Elon Musk because apparently other neo-Nazi sympathizers weren't available. Like, what even does that... I mean, obviously, David Duke is a white supremacist, but what does that... What does that do for anyone to suggest or liken Elon Musk to David Duke? Besides just serve to divide people, mislead people, lie to people, gaslight people. And then there was some pushback to Vanity Fair over that, like just blatantly crazy headline. And they apparently didn't care because they must know who their readership is, because after Ron DeSantis did the Twitter spaces, this was the article by a totally different reporter, by the way, for Vanity Fair. So clearly the entire staff there is in lockstep. Ron DeSantis launches his presidential campaign like the right-wing troll he is. Like, is this even, I don't even think this is in the op-ed. It's just everything Vanity Fair does like an op-ed, I guess. But again, I worry for people who, they'll just see a headline and immediately it implants in their brain like the unbelievable notion that Ron DeSantis and Elon Musk are somehow like in cahoots with David Duke, and that launching a campaign on Twitter means that you're a right-wing troll. It's truly insane to me. And I do not blame. There's some people who occasionally be like, hey, I used to watch you on the news all the time, and I had to just stop watching the news because it was making me angry every day. And I cannot blame people for that. I cannot blame them. I've even had people said, oh, I have to take a break. I'm just like, I'm not going to listen to any podcasts. I'm not going to do anything. So I just haven't listened to a few episodes. I don't even blame you. Sometimes the mental health hit that you take from reading headlines like that, it's absolutely unbelievable. Okay, coming up next, we're going to get some comments from you guys from the live stream today. But first, I ran into, we were at this event at KTTH last night, and I have, I know this guy who works for SPD who was there, and said, hey, Brandy, I took the First Mark Challenge. And I was like, did you tell them you heard about them on the Undivided Podcast? And he said, yes. He said that he's a veteran and has always gone with that insurance that's specifically for veterans, but he has done the First Mark Challenge. He's waiting for the results of the challenge to see if they can beat his, you know, veteran insurance. So if you want to join me and so many others in taking the First Mark Challenge, go to firstmarkinsurance.com. That's firstmarkinsurance.com. What they'll do is they'll look at all the insurance that you currently have. They'll figure out whether you have insurance you don't need, or whether you are underinsured, or whether they can find you a better value. And then they'll go about trying to do all the work for you for free. The First Mark Challenge doesn't cost anything. And then at the end of the day, you can decide, do I want to change my insurance or stick with what I already have? Here is Dave Taylor. He's the CEO of First Mark.
We believe and we say that we will help 100% of the people that we work with. Okay. Now that doesn't mean necessarily that 100% of the people we work with are going to become First Mark clients, but we believe that we will actually help 100% of the people, whether that be stay with your current carrier, but let's modify your coverage a bit so you're better protected, or ultimately, hopefully, come over to First Mark. We're going to put you with a different company and give you better coverage, right? So the challenge is really challenging individuals to give us an opportunity to prove that to them. That's really what the First Mark Challenge is.
Yeah, and I've told you guys that Mike and I took the First Mark Challenge. My friend Dory Monson had taken it, and so it was an easy decision to bring them on as a sponsor. But when we took the First Mark Challenge, we knew we were probably underinsured. We also knew it was a good time for us to go through it because we're getting married. And we ended up with miles better insurance, more insurance for more things at about the same price. So it was absolute no-brainer. And again, you never pay First Mark for anything, not for the First Mark Challenge. And they're an insurance broker, so they're just going to find you the best insurance, and you're going to, you know, they get paid by insurance companies out of that. So to me, the only thing it costs you is a little bit of time, and you could walk away saving a bunch of money or getting much better insurance for the same rate. Or you walk away and you just keep the insurance that you already have. So take some time. Firstmarkinsurance.com. Firstmarkinsurance.com. Take the First Mark Challenge like I have and like so many others have. Okay, let's get to comments. I missed you guys yesterday. I did. I always hate. I think that might be the first time I've just straight up like fully canceled an episode out of the blue. But I did offer you guys on Patreon and Locals a picture of my dog. Was that a good trade-off? no episode, but a picture of my dog, because I can give you more pictures of my dog. Let's see. On State Senator Mark Mullett deciding to enter the race for governor and thinking there's maybe a little carve out for him as a moderate Democrat, Lieutenant Dan says, I have nothing against Mullett. He seems more familiar than any Republican candidates. Yeah, there, you know, there's a couple Republicans in. We had Raul Garcia on the show, and then we're going to have Sammy Byrd on the show. He's coming in, I think, next week to tape with us. And they have a lot of work to do with name recognition, but I would argue Mark Mullett does as well. I mean, we know who he is because he's been on the show, and you guys are obviously very politically inclined, and you like to stay in the loop and watch the news. But when you think about it, I don't think anyone outside of those, you know, political circles knows who he is as a state senator. So he has a lot of work to do on name recognition as well. On Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal taking issue with the media suggesting that they might bear some responsibility if the debt ceiling deal is tanked, FBDC writes, or DC on Facebook, maybe that's what it means, DC on Facebook. Am I the only one that's sick of all this finger pointing? When will both parties pull their put their heads together and do what's right for the constituents? Sick of this schoolyard BS. They won't do it until voters demand it of them. They won't do it until voters purge the people who pull stuff like this. And I just don't know if that's going to happen in this country, because there is a big chunk of Americans who would watch that clip of Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal and cheer her on. And so, you know, we're all, I think, very reasonable, common sense people, and we realize that building consensus is the only way to get to the best solutions. But, I mean, so much of D.C. and politics in our state is so hyper-partisan, and voters let people get away with it, and they keep putting back in hyper-partisan figures. Gary says, we taxpayers have to budget, but Congress doesn't. Someone raise my budget ceiling. Yeah, can someone raise my debt limit? That would be absolutely amazing. Let's see here. Greg writes, Republicans blame Democrats. Democrats blame Republicans. I blame both. I also blame both. You can't get into the situation that we're in right now with our spending without a little bit of cooperation from both political parties. So they both need to work together to get us out of it. Let me see. On Elon Musk's Twitter space has gone awry. Timothy says, LOL, talking about getting to Mars when we can't even go back to the moon, and that's if we even went there in the first place. The difference is the government is the one, you know, that can't get us back to the moon. Elon Musk and a private company I have much more faith in to actually do things. Chris says, the progressive left tend to lean toward vilifying anyone that doesn't align with their ideals, particularly those that are rich. So associating Musk with Duke is perfectly in line with their vilification crusade to spread their vitriol and dislike for Musk. That's the basis of the association of Duke and Musk. Again, it's the same where we say that people jump to labels because they want to ruin your reputation. And they have seen that be effective in the past. And I actually have a story about this I'm curious to get your guys' opinion on, but they have seen when they call you racist or they call you right wing. They want to plant those seeds in people's minds so that people who are easily influenced will vilify you, will other you. And of course, that's what they're trying to do. They want, when you think of Ron DeSantis, to think, oh, he's just like David Duke. When you think of Elon Musk, oh, he's a white nationalist. He's a Nazi sympathizer. And the key is not letting people get away with that. And also not letting it bother you when someone does it to you. So this is a total tangent. I wasn't even planning to talk about this, but I'm kind of curious your guys' thoughts. So remember when Nicole, if you want to come on, because I want to get your opinion on this. I don't think that I've talked to you about this yet, actually. So do you guys remember when the Kent Chamber of Commerce, I was supposed to deliver a keynote address for, it was going to be back in March for their, this women's empowerment event. And they called me a couple like weeks beforehand and said, hey, we have some members who are a little worried about your ability to be the keynote because you went on the Tim Pool podcast, on Timcast, and because you were friends with Dori Monson. And I'm like, first of all, I refuse to absorb everything Tim Pool has ever said. And like, by virtue of me being on his podcast, I have to absorb everything he's ever said. And then I have to carry that like taint around with me. No. And then you're really going to make me justify my friendship with Dory Monson. But anyway, this came up. And Nicole, you tell me what you think. And you guys tell me what you think in the comments. So I am scheduled to give a keynote address to the Kitsap County Lincoln Day dinner. Mm-hmm. And that's like all the county Republican parties have Lincoln Day dinners. And I've been invited to many of them. And I always have a great time. Do I always agree with everybody in the room? Of course not. I'm not a Republican. And so, of course, we're going to have some things we dissent on. But someone made me aware that at the Lincoln Day dinner, one of the people who's going to be there, and I don't know how they're participating, I don't know the level of participation, is a January 6er, like someone who was actually convicted related to January 6th and like had to serve some jail time. And okay. So a couple people said, hey, I don't think you should go. And I'm like, wouldn't that be like giving in to the notion that I have to absorb the actions and beliefs of every single person who's ever in a room with me?
Yes, I think that's exactly what we're trying to say people should not do is right. Cancel because of that. Like, maybe that person learned something. I mean, you don't know what he's going to say.
That's also someone who probably should hear what I have to say about yes. Donald Trump and January 6th and the direction of the Republican
yeah.
Party.
Yeah, I don't get that at all. Yeah, I mean, no, it's one thing to like align yourself with somebody, but it's another thing to say, hey, I want to share my message. So because this person's in the room, I can't share my message. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Like, am I going to buddy up with him for a picture? Probably not. Cause I don't know how that would be used. But for the record, if anybody from that is listening, I will be there next week. Yep. I'm going to do it. I never really gave a thought to not going,
right.
But it's just this interesting thing and this vilification of, and I'm sure there'll be people on Twitter who use that against me. Brandy was at this dinner with a J6er and da, da, da.
Right.
And the, you know, the nice thing is don't care. I genuinely don't care.
Have to either.
I refuse to. I've been in a room with Shama Sawant. Does that mean I've done interviews with Shama Sawant?
Yeah.
Does that mean that I am a socialist now and that I agree with dismantling and defunding the police?
Right.
No one ever says it when it's that way. When I'm in a room with someone who is on that side of the political spectrum.
Right.
But when I'm in the room with somebody who's further to the right, it's like, oh, you were in a room with them and therefore you're a terrible person.
Right. And again, I think it's this, like, if you were going to an event that is specifically for, you know, spreading the January 6th message.
Like a bail bond fund for people arrested on January 6th.
Then that would make some sense. But this is obviously just a platform for everybody to get messages out, everybody to hear different opinions, different thoughts. And I think that's totally acceptable.
Yeah, it's really silly. And there goes the little thing again. It's really silly. And I'm sure they're going to use it against me, but I expect that, right? Like, I expect it. So, of course I'm going. But, you know, that tells me that people in the room might not agree with everything I have to say. I am a controversial figure among the state Republican Party.
But I credit them for inviting you, 100%. For inviting this guy, for inviting somebody else that thinks differently than the two of you. I think that's a good idea for these kind of events is to invite people that aren't you're not in an echo chamber. You're hearing different thoughts and ideas, and maybe somebody will say, yeah, I didn't think about it that way.
And Democrats would never do it. I've never been invited to a Democratic event for them to find out how do we cater more.
The crosscut thing, I will say, that was nice.
Yeah, but that wasn't a political event. That's what I mean. Like, the goal is, how can we bring people in?
Right.
How can we increase our numbers? How can we cater to moderates and independents? Democrats don't give a shoot about catering to moderates and independents. Republicans are actively trying to because they know that they have to. So that's why they invite me to these events. And there are some very, very conservative Republicans who don't like that. We're like, why would you invite someone who's not a Republican to do a keynote at a Republican event? I've gotten pushback.
Last night.
I've been booed.
Not you. I mean, somebody else that was there last night, Cassie Franklin. I mean, she at the beginning said she gave a little, I don't know, would you call that a keynote? She gave a little speech.
Yeah.
And said, I'm not a Republican. I am a D, and I hope you're all okay with that. And everybody was like, okay.
Yeah, and she showed up.
Moving on.
But honestly, if it had been the opposite, if it was a Democrat, she would have got booed. 100%. And so I think that says something about Republicans. Now, I have been booed at one I realize I got off on a crazy tangent, but I have been booed at one Republican event. I can't remember the organization, but I basically had said they were asking questions, and a woman asked me a question about election fraud. And I said, like, you guys need to move on from the 2020 election was stolen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, look, should we always be looking to improve our elections? Of course. But the idea, it's actually counterproductive to get it in people's brains that your vote isn't going to count.
So I actually think being booed for that
I got booed
makes
for that.
More sense
yeah.
than being booed just because you're you know, not a Republican or a D or an R or whatever.
You think it makes sense they booed me for saying move on from 2020?
I'm not saying that, but you know, you're speaking and you're saying, they're saying I disagree with something you're saying. So it's not like the whole room booed you, maybe, or maybe they didn't. And maybe that's saying the whole room agrees that it is an issue or whatever it is.
It was like an 80-year-old woman,
right,
who started the booing and then goaded people into joining the booing. And it was like maybe 2 dozen people who joined in.
But I'll say that's an issue. And I mean, you know, as long as they're, well, I don't know that that's respectful, but I mean, to show your thoughts, whatever. I mean, it's different than just being booed for who you are or how, you know, who you identify as or whatever, right? So it's a little bit different when it's a specific issue that they disagree and maybe the whole room disagrees. I don't know, but it's a little different in my head.
Right. And one of the things that I have committed to with these speaking engagements that I've been doing since I left Fox 13 is I will never speak to a room. I refuse to speak to the room because I've seen politicians do it too often. Where I'll see a politician speak and they're given a they're like changing or toning down their views depending on who the audience is.
I don't even know how you get away with that these days, because everything's recorded.
Because people don't care, right? And it's like, or you're not at everyone. And so for me, like, I would give the same speech. The speech I gave to the Washington Trucking Association was about all the ways that under one-party rule, they are emboldened to cut out the people they serve. Mm-hmm. I would have given the same freaking speech to a room full of Democrats. In fact, I don't even know. I think the Washington Trucking Association, it's not politically biased one way or the other. Mm-hmm. And there were some Democrats in the room who I talked to after. So I think it's literally, it's about showing up. Mm-hmm. They know who they're inviting, being who you are. Are there going to be people in the room at the Lincoln Day Dinner who probably don't agree with me? That's fine. But I think they are inviting me to something that a Democratic county party would never invite me to. Mm-hmm. And they get a lot of credit for that. So no, I'm not going to cancel on them because there's a J6er there.
Right.
I might have an interesting conversation with him,
in fact. I think that'd be fun. I think we should get him on the show.
Yeah.
Hey, if you make contact.
No. Well, I'm not, hey. I don't think I need to have a January 6er on the show. What am I going to learn from him?
I don't know.
Going too far. Okay. Will I have dinner with the man in a room full of people? Yeah. But I don't know anything about him. He could be like a nice guy who just like really made a bad decision.
Right.
Okay, let's get this last comment in. Aaron says, I thought on DeSantis' announcement, I asked you guys in my poll today, do you think DeSantis announcing his campaign on Twitter Spaces was a good idea? 56% said yes, 44% said no. So you pretty split on that. Aaron said, I thought DeSantis' announcement event was really good. Rough start, but it was an attempt at something new. Having David Sacks involved in this discussion was really good. Yeah, I didn't know much about him, and I had to read up on him. And I'm excited to see him be involved with major long-form national discussions moving forward. In my opinion, we need more of this for all candidates. The whole thing was raw, unscripted, and refreshing to me. It doesn't have to be perfect, and DeSantis kept his cool the entire time. It made him more relatable and human. I'm all good with stuff like this. I did think once it got rolling, it was kind of a cool, it almost felt like you were part of it, like part of the announcement in a way that you don't when you're watching it on TV. I do agree with something Nicole said about, it would be nice to just have video. Like they used to do Periscope, I think it was on Twitter, where it's actually video and you can see it. I think it's a little impersonal, like in a way when you can't see someone. So that's the only thing that, and Elon Musk did say, by the way, all presidential candidates are welcome. If you want to announce your campaign in this way, you're welcome to do it.
Or just to be on Twitter, I think was what he was saying too. You can just be on Twitter. Everybody's welcome on Twitter.
Well, yeah, but I think he did say that if they want to do a Twitter Spaces, everyone's free to do a Twitter Spaces.
I do think that the visual, though, it also would have helped their technical issues because they couldn't see if somebody was trying to talk and you couldn't see, or you couldn't tell people they were muted. And it was, a visual would have been good. I mean, you don't need an escalator, but something.
You don't need an escalator. I forget about the escalator. The escalator was unique, though.
It was.
So when you're looking,
I'm just saying you don't need it.
When you're looking for a way to make your campaign announcement unique, when everybody knows you're going to run, you know, you don't have to come down an escalator. But oh, it was very interesting.
A slide.
All right, whatever. That was fun today. Wow, that was a really long little chat segment. Mm-hmm. But I like to let you guys know all the craziness that happens behind the scenes with me and. So I will be at the Lincoln Day dinner. I do appreciate my friends giving me a heads up like, hey, are you sure you want to do this? Yeah, I want to do it. It's going to be a good, fun night. And I love going to Kitsap County. Okay, let's get to our closing sanity check, shall we? So dislike the two parties. And we talk a lot about that. And I think a lot of the things that I'm frustrated about and I discuss on the podcast is a result of really a system that's just not working for Americans anymore. And this is very, very true for 2024. You know, President Biden has said he's running again. I tend to doubt it. I tend to think that at the last minute, there is going to be an effort from Democrats to say, and Biden says, oh, I can't run. Like, look, I just can't. And they're going to pick someone to do it at the last minute so there can't be too much pushback and anger over it, et cetera. I tend to think that's going to happen, but let's just assume that Biden's running. So there are Democrats who have said that's ridiculous. Like, the man is not capable of doing it, so I'm going to run anyway. And two notable ones, Marianne Williamson, who ran in 2020, and then Robert F. Kennedy Jr. So they are both running presidential campaigns right now. And, they've gotten a little bit of attention, but there is a straight up refusal from Democrats to give them any sort of ability to get their campaigns off the ground. I thought it was interesting, though, that there's been some polling already done about, hey, would they have a chance of being successful, et cetera. There was one poll that from Change Polls. So it was conducted from the end of April to the beginning of May. And it showed that Marianne Williamson and RFK Jr. are both in double digits, which when you really think about it, I mean, Marianne Williamson, someone who like got virtually nothing in 2020, for her to be at 11% and RFK Jr. to be at 11%, combined 22%, against an incumbent president who says he's running again, that's actually very impressive. They have everything working against them. And it shows, I think, more than the strength of those two candidates, it shows the weakness of Joe Biden. But still, Democrats have said they will refuse to let this be a competition. They will refuse to hold debates with these candidates on the stage. They're not going to do that because they're not going to entertain any sort of challenge to the sitting president. And I would ask even Democratic voters, don't you think that's a little insane? Don't you think it's a little insane that you have a party, which I think is just like a corporation, that is telling you, a party that talks all the time about how democracy is at peril and it's Republicans' fault, they refuse to let the democratic process play out. They refuse to give you a choice for if you want Biden to be the Democratic nominee. They won't even entertain the idea. It's insane to me that we allow parties to do this to us, that we allow parties to decide for us who our choices are going to be on the ballot, even if other choices exist. It's absolutely wild. And again, I think that the country, I don't really believe that we can get out of some of this turmoil and division that we're in until the two-party system is somehow disrupted in a meaningful way. I think it'll take a third party or an independent winning a significant race in order to put the parties on notice that, like, hey, you're not invincible in this. But it's really disappointing, and I hope that Democrats somewhere along the line change their mind, and maybe they're forced into changing their mind by voters who say, hey, we don't want Joe Biden. And if you see Marianne Williamson and Robert Kennedy Jr., start to increase even further in the polls, I think Democrats have a real, real problem on their hands. But it is insane for me to continue to support any parties that won't let you choose, that won't let you have a choice in who ultimately ends up on the ballot. Okay, that's it for today's episode of Undivided. We've got a great Sundays with Subscribers coming up for you. We've been talking a lot on the show about the Olympia School District, which has become just this example of schools gone woke across the country. Like, it's been on national news. There's a few stories that we've covered. They had the school board member who was appointed, who was caught on video talking about, oh, we need to, tear the city down and calling cops pigs and stuff. It was the same school district that was segregating little kids and giving them safe spaces for kids of color, like safe clubs away from white people. Man, what am I missing, Nicole? There was another story. Wind instruments. Wind instruments are racist in the Olympia School District, and the band has roots in white supremacy or something, and so they're cutting band classes for kids. So anyway, a mom who has been at the forefront of exposing this ridiculousness, her kids went through the Olympia School District. She's got one left who's older and about to be out, or else I think she'd send her kids elsewhere. She is going to join us to talk about her effort and really her advice to other parents who are frustrated about this stuff in how they can get involved and how they can make a difference. So it's going to be an awesome episode on Sundays with Subscribers. If you have not become a subscriber already, please do so, and you can catch those great conversations that we have on Sunday. UndividedPod.com. That's UndividedPod.com. So I'll see subscribers on Sunday. For the rest of you, Monday is Memorial Day. So enjoy the holiday. We will not be here. We will not have a show on Memorial Day, but we'll be back with the live show on Tuesday. So get out, enjoy your weekend, enjoy time with friends and family, and enjoy what the holiday is all about. All right, we'll see you guys on Sunday and the rest of you on Tuesday.